Now playing in Los Angeles, exquisite food and drink, world-class art everywhere, spectacular sports, dazzling Hollywood attractions. L.A. offers the full variety of food scene, from game-changing taco trucks to 35 Michelin stars. And did you know that Los Angeles has more museums and theaters than New York City? Get your fix in music, film, comedy, and world-class museums. Plus, get behind the scenes in movie magic with a world-famous studio tour. That's something that should be on everyone's bucket list. Start here with discoverla.com. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally. And cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Hey, Rob.
We're both wearing red.
Oh, I like it. And it's kind of a Nantucket red, if you will.
It's you are in a beautiful location. Where is that?
I'm in Laurel Canyon.
You win the award for best background of any of the guests on Literally.
Yes, Literally.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Today we have the great Jane Lynch, who, as you will see, I discovered that we're the same person, basically. It's kind of creepy, but inspiring because she's awesome. I mean, she's won an Emmy and 2 Golden Globes for Sue Sylvester and Glee. And who among us does not love Sue Sylvester and Glee? She hosts Hollywood Game Night, which is genius. And she's in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, won an Emmy for that. She's won more Emmys than I have. Maybe she should be hosting and I should be the guest. Let's see what's what. I'm so glad that you've taken time to come and hang out with us today. It's very, very exciting. I was going over just some background on you, and I came across something that really made me laugh about your mother going, I don't know if you're going to be an actress, Jane.
Yes.
I just don't know.
Yeah. She said not everybody can do what they want, which I think said more about her than it did about me.
Right?
Yeah.
What would she have had you do? Like in her dream scenario.
Oh, well, she told me all the time what she would have me do. She thought I should be a teacher. She always said you need to have something to fall back on, and I should learn how to type. And at one point, when I was like in my late 20s, and I was doing Shakespeare in the Park, and she came to see it, and she said that was really good and everything, honey. But I still see you teaching, and I stopped her, and I said, you can never say that to me ever again. And she never did. And listen, nobody was happier with my having success in this business than my mother. She was thrilled. I think there was an actress inside of her that never got to come out. And she loved to sing. And, I think when she said to me, you know, not everybody can do what they want, I think that's where that came from.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I look back, having kids now of my own and growing through and in the prime of the job hunt,
mm-hmm.
gives me such amazing appreciation for my parents, for when I told them that I wanted to be an actor. And that was all my interest was. I literally had no other. I got fired from every job I attempted to have. I was fired from being a busboy. I was fired for a projectionist at the Malibu Cinema for kissing girls behind the ice making machine and putting the reels on in the wrong order. I was awful. I was awful at everything other than being an actor. And I just so appreciate that my parents let me do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost, looking back on it, I go, were they negligent? Were they like shirking their fiduciary responsibilities by not, by, I didn't go to college. I, you know, cause I did a movie. I had to choose between doing a movie. It's a whole other perspective, isn't it?
I really feel
for your mom.
Yeah. Yeah. And how parents, you know, you're a parent, how they just trust that the world is going to be kind to your child and your child's going to find a way to eke out a living in this world. And yeah, it must be a really scary thing. That's why I only have dogs.
You're so smart. Although I will tell you, my dog, I have five dogs. I was just talking. One of them just came up and put his foot in the soup and then threw it on the ground and then drank it and ran out. And my wife, Cheryl, was like, but it's such a good dog. I'm like, that's not, by definition, that's a bad dog.
That's a bad dog, but I'm sure adorable and is worthy of having, deserving of that soup.
Do you do animal rescues? I think you do.
Oh, well, I don't do it myself. But, well, yeah, we do. We do. I don't go into the shelters and pick out animals that would kill me. But I support them. And we always have old rescues. We adopt through a place called A Purposeful Rescue. And we'll get old dogs. And the thing is then they're gone in a couple of years. But still, they had a great couple of years. Their last years of their lives were really great. And so we have one old girl right now, and we lost one at Thanksgiving, and we've got a little puppy who's probably going to be running up here that we found at Runyon Canyon in L.A. Someone just dumped him.
Aw. We haven't done it in a couple of years, well, more than a couple, but there were a few years where we would identify dogs in the shelters, my wife and I, and then kind of have a network of people that were likely to adopt them.
Yeah.
And we would go in and swoop in like an army event. We would take them all at once, bring them to the house. We'd have mobile vets who would come and, you know, check them out. We have mobile groomers, and then we'd have like a showroom.
Aww.
And people would come. It was the cutest. The problem was then we always ended up with more dogs for us.
Yeah, for you. That's right. Now you have five.
For us.
We had four. The height of our dog population was four, and that was pretty tough. And we said three is the most. And so we have two now. We might get another one. We'll see.
I'm a big believer in non-pet names for pets.
Oh, what are your pet names too? Yeah, we do people names. Bernice, Millie, Arbuckle. Arbuckle's kind of, but it's a fatty Arbuckle because he was a fat dog. Yeah, we do like real names. Olivia. I've always wanted to have a dog like named Diane or Karen.
Yes.
Well, that's what Linda Brooke, that's why I love Linda. To call a dog Linda, yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we had Wayne and David and Buster.
David.
David was one of the great dog names of all time.
That's great. We had a Kevin. We had a Kevin once too. Oh,
now,
great.
But here's the thing is because I'm just a big pile of silly that the names last for 2 seconds and then they become baby talk gibberish names.
Nicknames, yeah. Like my dog Rumi, named after the poet, I call him Doom Doom. That's all I call him. I called him Rumi for about a week. And then it was Doom Doom, Boom Boom, Doomer, Rheumatologist.
Yeah, Rumi, Doomy, Zuma Zoom Zoomy, Gooby, like, yeah.
You never call them by their names. No, never.
No. Okay, explain Rumi to me, because people have been trying to get me to read Rumi forever.
Yeah.
If I get one more fucking Rumi book from Chris Martin, I'm going to strangle him and the entire band of Coldplay.
Yeah.
I get it. They're evolved. They're smarter than I am.
Yeah, well, I'm not smarter than you are. You know, my partner, Jennifer, she came up with the name Rumi, and I have two Rumi books right here just for effect. I can't say that I gravitate toward him, but I really want to because he's supposed to just be a delight about the relationship with the divine and how he makes it romantic. And I don't know, it just doesn't grab me that way. And I bet everybody's lying who says they get him. I don't buy it.
I don't buy it either. I find it I've tried, and I literally think that it is. I like the idea of me reading Rumi.
I love the idea of you reading Rumi. It's so awesome.
And here's the other thing, not to brag,
please,
because I've told the other side of this story. I once had my IQ tested, and it was the worst thing I ever did. It was horrible. I should never have done it
because it was high or
because
low.
When the results, oh, it was really low. When it came back, it was like not good news.
Okay.
It was what I didn't think I had long to live from the looks of the.
You're too dumb to live. Yes.
But on the other side of it, within that, I was off the charts like crazy. They'd never tested anybody like me on other areas. And one of them was reading comprehension.
Huh.
So I may not have a high IQ, but my reading comprehension is like otherworldly. And if I can't read Rumi with my big honking crazy high IQ testing, I think it says something.
Yeah, I wish I had that. That's one of the things that I'd like, if there's such a thing as praying, that I give little prayers for, is please, please allow me not only to comprehend what I'm reading, because, you know, I'm in the Twitter age where you're just, it's like bursts of adrenaline, boom, boom. I can't read a whole article. Please let me not only be able to comprehend it, but retain it. Please let me be a student. Please let me hold on to this stuff because I'm interested, but you know, I zip off and I don't like that. I want to learn.
Are you good at memorizing dialogue? Is that hard for you?
Not anymore.
When you're
dialogue is fine, but Rob, almost every role I've had, I have monologues. I just, I stand up and tell people what's what. And so if I have like a back and forth, I'm like easy, but the monologues, when I was doing Glee, I had 2-3-page monologues.
Who was writing Glee when you was Brad Falchuk writing it?
Brennan and Ryan were the first three writers. I am the character of Sue Sylvester is the brainchild of Ian Brennan, another Chicagoan, just like myself. I'm a great deal older than he is, but there is a particular sensibility in it. Irish Catholic Chicago sensibility. It's kind of dark and mean and has really like satanic images. That's Ian. That's Ian. Good Catholic boy.
right.
Yeah.
As a new member to the Ryan Murphy universe, I have a total understanding for now and appreciation for what it's like to work in that. A lot of people say that they have worlds. The world of Marvel. Ryan Murphy has a world.
He has a world, definitely. Yeah.
And you're on the early Mount Rushmore with your sweatsuit.
Indeed. Yeah, that was what a gift that was. What a gift that whole time was. And I got to say some of the most ridiculously vile things ever said on television.
So fun.
Yeah.
And then when you were on Glee, how much thought went into the wardrobe? Because I just love the notion of you in these tracksuits. It was just the absolute greatest. So iconic. It's an iconic image.
Indeed. And a really strong choice too. And not like Lululemon, but it was like Adidas, even though we didn't use Adidas. You know, with the stripe down the leg and the stripe down the arm.
It was very Run DMC.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Honestly.
Or what is it? Like old Russian guy hiking up the hills. I don't know if you ever hike in LA, but every once in a while you'll see these old Russian guys and total sweatsuits, matching sweatsuits.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, but so that was Ryan Murphy. That was his thing, and they would be of different colors as they were. I mean, I had an entire rainbow of tracksuits. It was the best thing.
Then,
it was like going to work in your pajamas, basically. Comfy.
Which I'm aspiring to.
I'm
aspiring to get to the point where I can wear my own, like Adam Sandler, who just when he does movies, I've talked about this before. It's like wherever he took his last vacation is where the movie is going to take place, and he's going to wear his own clothes.
Yes,
and
exactly. He's going to wear a hat, his favorite hat, and his favorite jersey. Yeah.
How did you find out that Carol Burnett was going to play your mom? Walk me through this, because this is one of the things that people don't understand about being on TV that I love is. You're on a show and inevitably you'll be standing by the monitor and Ian, in your case, or somebody will go, so looks like we're going to introduce your mom on episode 7. You're like, really? Well, that's really exciting. Who are you thinking of? And it's inevitably these insane people, and then you end up with like a perfectly fine actor, but it's never who you said.
Right.
You got Carol fucking Burnett.
Oh, I know.
How did that happen?
Insane. First of all, Carol Burnett got a hold of Ryan Murphy and said, I want to play in your sandbox. So whatever you want me to do. And he said, well, why don't you play Sue Sylvester's Nazi hunting mother? And and then he said to her, what song would you like to sing? And she said, well, since our show is set in Ohio, why don't we sing that that song for my sister Eileen? Why, oh, why did I leave Ohio? And so that's how that all that happened. It was her call. She decided. So that it did blow my mind. And, you know, I'm a big Montecito fan. And Carol lives in Montecito. She's one of your neighbors. So I've had brunch with her up at the Biltmore a couple of times. And I did jury duty with her husband, Brian. So she's become a very good friend. Yeah. Yeah, that was amazing.
One of the many times where I just get so grateful for, you know, living the life I've been able to live is when I see Carol, because I can remember like it was yesterday waiting in front of the television for the Carol Burnett show to come on. And, you know, because I'm from Ohio and I was living in Ohio watching it. Of course I'd be eating some real like Midwestern, like Jell-O with milk in it.
You know, that's Yes.
Do you remember Jell-O with milk in it?
Yeah, I do remember Jell-O with milk.
What the hell was that?
Crazy. I know. Who thought of that? Yeah, crazy.
Because Jell-O isn't gross enough.
You
got to
add some milk and stir it up a little.
Like, you know what would be great? Curdling milk in this as you watch.
It was great.
The Carol Burnett show.
Yeah.
And then I became obsessed with, as I moved to L.A. and got here, is CBS in Television City, like you'd pass on Fairfax where they shot it.
Sure, yeah, yeah. And the Smothers brother was across the hall. Yeah, absolutely. Didn't that blow your mind?
It blew my mind. And you're from Illinois,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, from a suburb of Chicago, Dalton.
Did you have, when you were growing up, like legitimate summer stock in your area?
No, not at all.
No,
we didn't have that. My parents did a show at the church called Port of Call, where they would perform in the high school, and each room would be a different port of call. But that's it. We didn't perform. No, we didn't have it. Did you have it in Ohio?
Yeah. There was big time. We had a thing called the Kenley Players, and which I'm obsessed with. John Kenley passed away a few years ago. He was 97 years old. And he had a circuit of theaters, but they were big Memorial Hall theaters.
Uh-huh.
So it's 1,100, 2,500 seats. And he would have a rotating shows that would come through. So you'd see like Sandy Duncan doing Peter Pan, and then Harvey Korman in Under the Yum Yum Tree, and then Rip Taylor in The Music Man. And like, it was one step away from a Waiting for Guffman type of situation.
And with one star, right? One star that would be in the cast.
One star.
And then everybody else would be local.
100%. And it was like, you'd play Warren, Ohio, Lansing, Michigan, Dayton, Cincinnati, Columbus, and that was sort of it. And you just know it was every sort of second lead on whatever the hit sitcom was of the time coming in to just get fucking blottoed through their summer vacation.
Yeah.
And making some nice little coin on the side.
Yeah, I'll bet. And were you in those shows? Would you audition for them to play parts?
I auditioned and I never got one.
No.
But I was also really young. So I was like 8 and 9 years
old. Right.
So I auditioned for Oliver, for one of the, you know, the chorus boys in Oliver. And Vincent Price was Fagin.
Oh my God. Vincent Price. He must have been old.
He was old. I mean, I saw great shit. I saw, but that's the thing. Then when I moved to California, there was actually less theater in LA than there was in Dayton, Ohio. And where you were at Steppenwolf, correct?
I was in Chicago. So, and probably one of the big reasons we didn't have regional theater is we had Chicago 20 minutes away. Which,
that's,
you know,
right.
All the big shows would come in. And then Chicago's a great actor's town. It's A lot of non-equity acting ensembles, and Steppenwolf was one of those, and then it blew up and became huge. And indeed, I wasn't in the ensemble, but I did 4 or 5 shows there. I toured with Second City. I was in the touring company, and I did a lot of what we call off-loop, loop being the center of the city, non-equity off-loop theater company. So I have a great deal of, you know, experience doing kind of the stuff where you bring your own costumes and you build your own sets and you clean the toilets, that sort of stuff.
Do you, when you were at Second City, were you ever there like when Lorne Michaels was coming in to look for the next cast of Saturday Night Live, that stuff?
I was never chosen for that sort of thing, but I was there when Bonnie Hunt wasn't on, but she became a big star, like Bonnie Hunt and Joel Murray and Tim Meadows was there. Dave, I don't know if you know these guys, David Pasquese, these are really great actresses, you know, that I know. And they would get, you know, kind of plucked out of there either by Lorne Michaels or by a television series in, you know, in LA, and they'd go to pilot season and everybody would see if are they going to become a big star?
I can only imagine what it's like to be in one of those, you know, amazing historic ensembles.
Yeah.
And then, you know, tonight's the night. Do you know who's out in the house tonight?
Yeah. And in a way, too, it was kind of a shame because there was such a purity to doing theater in Chicago. We did, when I was doing it, there weren't a lot of people plucking us out. That only happened at Second City Main Stage. And, you know, Steppenwolf was its own thing. But there was kind of this thing, especially at Second City, you'd get in the touring company and then you right away want to get on one of the stages. And then when you get on one of the stages, you want to get on the main stage. So there was always this kind of a climbing thing where you were never happy with where you were. You were always looking to the next step. So I didn't suffer from that because I never made it to the next steps.
The other thing I find interesting about you is, and you can help me with this. We talked about Rumi. You frankly weren't much help with Rumi.
I'm so sorry.
That was disappointing. But you have another chance here with telling me that I do need to get into transcendental meditation.
Oh, yes.
Because everybody I admire does it.
Yeah.
And by the way, not a lot of people do it. I'm not saying that, but the few people I know who do it love it.
Yeah. It is. It's really great. So when you hear of TM, that's what it is. It's transcendental meditation. It's centuries old, but it had its popularity here in the 60s, early 70s when Maharishi came over and the Beatles went to ashrams with him and everything. But it's 20 minutes a day. It's scientifically proven. There's no woo-woo about it. You can get woo-woo with it if you want, but basically it's pure science. You sit for 20 minutes, and at some point you're chanting internally the mantra that they give you, and you don't tell anybody what that is. You never say it out loud. You just chant it internally, and at some point, I mean, it's not like lights go off. That happens occasionally, but you just kind of drop. And it's interesting that it's called transcendental, which means a high, but it's really a drop. It's almost like David Lynch said, it felt like somebody, he was in an elevator and someone snapped the cables and you go, phew. And in that you get a level of rest that you can't get in deep sleep. It's really, you know, I love doing it. I do 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes at night. And you have to be trained by a teacher of meditation, but you don't need money to do it. If you have the money, you pay them. But if you don't, they'll do it for free. And I'm associated with the David Lynch Foundation because it's right down the street.
Yep.
That's where I learned.
Yep.
And it's really wonderful. It's a lovely thing to look into.
Who bestows the mantra on you?
Your teacher. And you go through a whole class. There's usually about 5 or 6 of you in a class, and it's about 5 days, or maybe it's 4 days, and you have to do them in a row. And the teacher takes each one of you after she's explained or he's explained scientifically what happens to your body and your consciousness when you're meditating. Then she has a little bit of a ritual where you go into a room with her and she whispers into your ear, hopefully your good ear. I'm deaf in one ear. Are you deaf in one ear?
I'm deaf in one ear too.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Yeah. I'm always like, oh, this one, please don't whisper it in my deaf ear. I'll be like George Bailey.
I know.
Yeah. And they whisper hopefully in your good ear, and then they do it just that once and you remember it. And You and from that moment on, you're meditating with the mantra.
I've got to do this. It's one of those things. It's been on my bucket list to try. And my problem whenever I've tried to meditate is I just go to sleep.
That's okay too.
I just get sleepy.
They'll tell you it's okay. That's okay too. You don't have to stay awake. In fact, if I don't do my second meditation at night, it's totally within the rules to falling asleep for the last, however many minutes before you fall asleep. Yeah, it's the easiest thing you will ever do because it's the most forgiving method. And there are some rules, but—
that's insane because I keep hearing, I don't know why I had it in my head that it was this unbelievably rigorous discipline.
No, it's not. It's easy and forgiving and gentle.
Really?
And kind. It's lovely. Yeah. Now, there are some people who go off on meditation courses and they'll meditate for like 12, 18 hours a day. But no. That the 20 minutes a day is literally just sitting and, you know, you don't use your phone for a timer. You use a regular clock and you just kind of have it off to the side. You close your eyes and just chant them. And, thoughts are supposed to come up. You don't stop your thoughts.
Yes.
They come up and you go back to your mantra.
Somebody told me that when your thoughts come up and you're trying to meditate, that this visual worked for me, that it's like the game of Frogger where the logs come by and you just let them, those
let
are your
them go
thoughts.
By, yeah.
It's just a game of Frogger. Here comes the lily pad, let yeah. it go by.
Yeah, there you don't have to attach right? to them. And if you attach to them, that's okay too. That's, like I said, it's the most forgiving, gentle, kind thing you could do for yourself. And it really affects your nervous system. It really calms you.
What would you
down.
Say? What's the benefit that you find that you like the most from it? Is it energy and calmness?
That too. I'm not so much, I don't feel the energy so much, but you talk to Jerry Seinfeld and he does a whole comic monologue about how it actually energizes him. He says he's an energy junkie. I haven't noticed that so much, and that's not my deal anyway. But it's a presence and a calmness and sleep, and I look better. Honest to God, it is like
wow.
Anti-aging. It gets everything just kind of going in a real smooth kind of, you know, it's just everybody's going to have a different, great thing about it. But I can't recommend it highly enough. And I'm sure there's somebody in Montecito who's a teacher. I guarantee you there is a teacher in Montecito.
There's so much of that up here. This is a big yoga place, which is another thing that I've got to get into. Because, again, everybody who practices yoga, particularly as they get older,
mm-hmm.
they just look so young and they're just so, I mean, I'm still recovering from the evening. Weekend I spent at Sting's house where I woke up and he was nude, practicing yoga in the garden. I have that visual in my head that I need to either accept or get over or embrace.
Just accept it. And it'll go away like Frogger. It'll just go away.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Hey, listeners. Ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in store and learn more at macys.com/purpose. Thanks to Quince, I can get high-end, versatile pieces at fantastic prices. They've got killer luxury essentials that are perfect for my wardrobe. Quince has all the must-haves, like Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters, from $50, iconic 100% leather jackets, and versatile flow knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of middlemen and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. One of my producers tried Quince, and here's what he had to say.
I'm really excited to revamp my closet with Quince. There are so many great options at pretty unbeatable prices. I'm really excited to try out the burgundy cashmere crewneck. I love the blue chore jacket. Maybe I'll throw some joggers in there. These are great options at pretty unbeatable prices.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/rob for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/rob. To get free shipping and 365-day returns, quince.com/rob.
Were you on the West Wing when I was there?
Yeah, I was. Yes. After? In fact, you were very nice to me, and you probably don't remember, but you gave me a ride in that. Your kids were little, and you gave me a ride in the golf cart. You drove me to from the parking lot to set at Warner Brothers.
I remember that. I remember that golf cart.
Yeah, your kids were young. I think that both of them were there, two boys, and they were like, you know, 4 and 5.
That's right.
Yeah, so I did two episodes. I played a reporter, and it was one day of shooting, but it got put into two different episodes, and they turned out to be the two of the most like iconic West Wing episodes. It's when he shot. Remember,
and it ends. Oh, of course.
And it ends one season, then opens the other season. So many people know me from that, Rob. I can't tell you because they're two very iconic episodes of that show.
I remember that scene, the shooting sequences in DC. That was a big moment for the show and a big moment to shoot. I remember that. I'm so glad. Oh, that's the episode you're in. I have to go back and look at that.
Yeah, one. Two of them. The last one and then the first one of the next season.
It's amazing how that show what it means to people. Yeah. I mean, like you have Glee. So you know what that's like. I mean, the Glee fans are. Is there a name for Glee fans? Anybody ever?
Gleeks.
What is it?
G-L-E-E-K. Gleeks. And what are you, West Wingers called?
Wingnuts.
Wingnuts. Yeah. It was such a fantasy of such a good man in the White House and such a, you know, such high principles, and everybody around him, you know, believed in him. And I think maybe Obama might have been as close as we've gotten to that.
Yeah. Kennedy, you know, there's that thing. Aaron would never reference a president past Kennedy. So if you go look, that was part of the world of it, because if you started referencing Carter or Reagan or Ford or whatever, I think people began to like go, well, wait a minute, is this real? Is this not real? So I always thought it was fascinating that we lived in a world where there really wasn't a president after John Kennedy.
Yeah, yeah.
In the West Wing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes sense too, because you start getting into people's point of view about the more recent presidents. And when you go to Kennedy, there's just kind of a glow around him. People don't say bad things about John F. Kennedy, even people who are, way to the other side of the spectrum. You know, he's kind of considered this in a bubble of this, Camelot.
Yeah, for sure. I'm having so much fun because I have your, right next to me, I have your filmography. And every time I look over, I see something that's more fun than the last thing. I see that you are, this is too good. Well, first of all, you're in The Fugitive.
Yeah.
Tell me about, I love that movie. That's one of my favorite movies ever. What's that? So I'm going to go back and look at that one too.
Yeah. I was doing a play in Chicago. You know, we shot that in Chicago. That was shot in Chicago, in Chicago. And I was living in Chicago, and I did a play called The Real Live Brady Bunch. And it was this ridiculous thing that we were doing at a little theater on the north side of the city. And somehow the assistant of our director, Andy, whose name is escaping me now, but he has a,
I'm going to think of it too. Yes. He lives in Montecito.
Nicest guy. And she said,
Andy Davis.
Andy Davis. His production company's in Montecito. And his assistant said, hey, there's this girl. I think she'd be great for the scientist. And he said, oh, well, hire her. And they offered me $8,000. And I was like, oh, that's so much money. And and I got to work with Harrison Ford. It was the greatest thing in the world. And Harrison was very nice to me. And that he was not happy with the way the scene was written. So he said, come with me. And he grabbed an umbrella because it was raining. We went into his trailer. We worked out the beats. And we came back and shot it. And we shot it that way. So I was like kind of working on the script with Harrison Ford. And I was, you know, 29 Whoa. Years old. It was mind blowing. And he was this huge star. So that was pretty amazing.
I was hoping that was going to be sort of the answer, that like that Harrison was great and it was in there. And that I love the idea of you hammering out a scene with Harrison Ford in The Fugitive.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was like, I don't like these lines. We're going to work it out. And so we came up with our own thing and it was good.
He's such a stud. I did a TV series called Brothers and Sisters with his wife, Calista Flockhart, who I adore.
Yeah.
And we would be, I have such a great memory of, Calista, this beautiful ball gown, and I'm in this black tie with the Geary designed LA Philharmonic building, and the moon is rising, and it's late on a Friday. As you know, we always shoot late on Friday nights, and her phone is ringing and ringing and ringing, and she's not picking up. It's Harrison. And I'm like, and I'm getting more and more nervous the more times he's calling and she's not picking up the phone. It's Harrison. I go, it's Harrison Ford. You should really
pick up the phone.
I mean, you don't let, I said, Calista, I don't want to hear that bullwhip. So you're in the Chris Guest universe.
Yep.
You're a certified member. He's one of my favorite directors ever. I think I already mentioned that in this podcast.
Did you? Yeah. Were you? You've never done a movie with him, though, right?
No. I would love to.
You're too famous. He would tell you you're too famous. I'm too famous now too.
Oh, that's
interesting. He likes people who when you look at them on screen, you don't know who they are.
Damn it.
Yeah, I know.
I'm screwed. But wait, tell me about, he directed you in a Frosted Flakes commercial? This is my favorite factoid ever.
Do you know Sean Masterson, the actor, funny guy? Yep. Yeah. Anyway, he's a Chicago dude too, but we were both out here and we auditioned for the Christopher Guest commercial. We were both cast. And we didn't know it was a Christopher Guest commercial. And this was after Waiting for Guffman. And I, of course, loved that movie and had the preposterous fantasy of, I wonder if I'll ever get to do that. And so we showed up for the callback for this commercial, and I walk in and it's Chris Guest. And I know it's crazy. I did not expect him. There was no sign that said Chris Guest. And then after he cast me in that, and then when we were shooting that commercial, he said, you know, I do movies. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And he said, maybe we'll get to work someday. And then I ran into him at a restaurant one morning and he said, ah, I forgot about you. Come to my office. And he offered me a role in Best in Show. He had completely forgotten about me, and then he saw me in this restaurant. And I was like, what if I went to a different restaurant?
That's the way it happens, listener. Be careful what restaurants you go to. You're a struggling actor out there. It's all about where you eat. First of all, Best in Show is, I mean, we've already established how much we love dogs. So we're so in that world.
Yeah.
I don't think of Chris Guest in a Frosted Flakes commercial. Was there anything about the Frosted Flakes commercial that I would watch and go, oh yeah, I can see that that's Chris Guest?
Oh, absolutely. We improvised the whole thing. It was really goofy. And you know, Chris Guest direct, I don't know that he does anymore, but at that time he was directing like a commercial a day. And anything you saw on television that you laughed at, Chris directed it. In fact, he's the guy who started the, what's the sports, cable network. I forget. Oh, ESPN.
ESPN.
You know, those kind of weird commercials that I used to do where the athletes would be walking through the corporate offices and shaky camera, and they were funny and irreverent. Yes. That's Chris Guest. He created that.
I know exactly what those commercials are. Absolute classics.
So you have our Frosted Flakes commercial. If you saw that, you would see we're like out in front of supposedly the Kellogg's Corporation in Battle Creek, Michigan, looking for Tony the Tiger. You know, we're stalking him. We're trying to get a picture with him. And it's just so weird and crazy and completely improvised, just like Waiting for Guffman.
And so, you know, because when the closest I've done to stuff like that would be Parks and Rec.
Yes.
There's certainly a lot of great improvisational people who, you know, the top of their game, but there was always sort of a structure. Well, the scripts were great. They were great. We shot the scripts 98% of the time, but then we would get a version where we could improv on the guest stuff.
Yeah.
How is there any script or
no.
is there an outline? How does it walk me through
sure.
the process?
It looks just like a script, and it'll say like scene one exterior, the park. Corky and so-and-so talk about the upcoming competition, and that's it. And then it'll say scene number two, Chrissy and whatever Jennifer Coolidge's character's name are discussing dog kennels and their you know, championship poodle. And there are some plot points he'll want us to get in. And he told us who our characters were. He gave us a backstory. And then he turns over the wardrobe people to you and he says, how do you want your character to look? And then you tell the wardrobe person and you shop with them. And then the set designer comes over and says, what do you think your house looks like? Or what do you think your office looks like? And then they go off and build it. I mean, it's crazy, crazy fun.
Jesus.
And it's really kind of, you are calling the shots. Chris certainly gives you some great information about your character and what has to happen in the movie. And we know what the series of scenes are going to be, but how the character is expressed, how the character looks and sounds and acts and is all up to you.
And after a take, is there that moment where everybody huddles up and goes, okay, this was genius. Let's do another and do more in here. And maybe let's move away from this part.
He will do that. He's very few words, but after we do like the master, and he doesn't know what it's going to look like. It's just he rolls the camera and he rolls and he rolls and he rolls, and you improvise and you're doing blah 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 blah, and then he'll finally yell cut and he'll say, "Very good." He might not even say very good. He'll say, "We don't need this part that when you talked about that, we don't need that. We have to make sure we get this in every shot, and that's it. Let's just do it again." And the camera gets closer and closer and closer. And we've kind of decided what the master looks like, and then we just keep shooting that.
Ugh.
But at different angles, the camera getting closer and closer, and then on different
angles. That sounds like heaven.
It's fantastic, and it's not – the hardest part about it is what you do to yourself and your brain, because it's really easy to do. And after about – by the time I got to A Mighty Wind, I was much more relaxed about it, and I didn't stress so much about it, because you feel like it's all up to you. But as long as you've done your acting homework, you know who your person is, you know what you're wearing, you know how you sound, and what the person's point of view is, you just show up. It is that easy, but you kind of have to pack heavy to get there.
You know what I like of Chris's that's people forget about is I had Marty Short on and we were talking about it, is the big picture.
Picture, yeah. Yeah, that was fantastic. That was a lot different than what he does most of the time, but he and Michael McKean wrote that.
Those movies are just... I'm jealous, very jealous of that. How long have you been deaf in your right ear, just like me?
I had a really high fever as a baby and like an infant, and that's when we think it happened. How about you? Same thing?
Same.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like, by the way, even the way you describe it is exactly what my parents say. Like, I don't know. It's like a really high fever when you're an infant. And like, we think that's when it happened. I'm like, how about some more details?
Yeah. How about when did you find out?
No details are forthcoming.
When did you realize that it wasn't? Because I thought it was normal to hear out of one ear that I didn't say anything about it. When did you realize?
My mom tells the story that she knew something was wrong. It was before I could talk even, apparently, because she put the phone up to me to say I had a grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like nothing going on in my face. And she said, all of a sudden she knew something was like, she put the phone to the other side and I was like, and then back. So apparently for me, it happened, you know, like within the first year.
Yeah. I was about 8 years old and you know, it had happened when I was an infant and my brother, remember transistor radios where you put it in your ear? It's just one thing. It's an ear thing. And my brother was switching ears and I said, you can't do that. And my mom said, well, why can't he do that? You know, it perked her ears up, and I said, because you only hear out of one ear. And she was like, nope. And I went into a doctor and they tested my hearing. And I overheard my mother talking to the doctor saying, will she live a normal life? And the doctor said, oh, yeah. My mom worried about things.
That's nothing would instill good, solid feeling quite like, will she live a normal life?
She live a normal life. And I was like, yeah.
And the doctor said, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he said, no,
she will never hear the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's, Lonely Hearts Club Band, or Dark Side of the Moon as they were meant to be heard.
Exactly. I always wonder, too, are we missing anything in terms of, we do have stereo sound because the one ear we have is really good, but I wonder if we're missing
everything. I got news for you. Huh. I'm perfectly happy, very well adjusted. You are too, but let's just be honest. We're missing a fucking shit ton of stuff.
Oh, wow. Because I love music. And no, is there more?
No, no. One, I think if one day we could both hear out of our other ears, first of all, I think our heads would explode.
The head would explode. Yes, I think so.
They would literally explode.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, like, I would finally be able to stop doing what I hate. So I come home and I go, hello. And they go, hi, honey, I'm in here. I go,
I don't know where here is.
Because I don't know where sound comes from.
Me
I
too.
I don't know where the sound's coming from.
I have that too. I don't know where it's coming from. Like, so there'll be a phone ringing and I'm, you know, my phone. And I have no idea where it's coming from.
Here's a good one for you. How about when those detectors in the ceilings and beep.
Oh, and you can't find the
source.
And
then you change the batteries and you don't know where they're coming from. And you can, worse.
Exactly.
Here's the other thing is I'm convinced that people think I'm a dick because they're, I'm surely been untold times mm-hmm. where people have come up to me on the street and got my bad ear.
Yep, me too. And you just ignore them.
Or a crowd
them.
And been like, hey, I just want to say hello. And I don't even hear them.
Yeah.
So I don't react. They must think I'm a total asshole.
Yep, my partner's always on the lookout for me. She'll like hit me in the shoulder and go, she's talking to you. Oh, is it your right or your left ear, Rob?
It's I can hear out of my left. My right is the one that's gone.
Oh, me too. Exactly the same.
Same as...
Yeah.
And then how about when we're doing acting and we have to talk on the phone?
Yeah. And like, they want
I
you to use
this ear? I can't
even
put the phone on my ear.
It feels so weird.
Because I've never done it.
Mm-hmm.
So I will literally put the phone receiver on my forehead. I have no muscle memory.
Yeah. It feels weird on the wrong ear too. Nothing feels right about it.
No, nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody else famously was deaf in one ear.
It's Stephen Colbert, it's a, I think.
Well, I think we should. Colbert, that's right. Yeah. We should make it our own fun club.
We should.
How are you loving doing Hollywood Game Night?
Oh, yeah. We haven't done it in, like a year. But we just did a quarantine edition where I shot it from my home and it's going to be on Tuesday. I'm sure these will, this show will come out after it's been on. But
right. Yeah.
I shot it in my house and we had six celebrities and we shot at their house. So it was all of us together and it went off without a hitch. Technologically, it was really good. It worked out. And we raised money for Red Nose Day, which is, that organization that lifts children out of poverty all over the world. It's a wonderful, wonderful organization.
Have you ever had anybody who was terrible at the game? You're like, wow, I'm a big fan of theirs, but boy, they're
bad stupid.
At this game.
I never, so much. There have been a couple of people who were so self-conscious, they never got into it. And only like two that I can think of that were, everybody comes to have fun and it doesn't matter if you're good or bad. I don't even notice if you're good or bad. What I notice is how much fun you have at it. And there have been a couple of people who have, just could not loosen up and, no amount of booze loosened them up. But for the most part, everybody shows up and has a blast.
Well, who came up with the actual game?
Hollywood Game Night?
Yeah.
The show was Sean Hayes. He has really great.
That's right.
He has wonderful game nights at his home.
That's right.
And they were always crazy. He made up the games himself. And then he, smart guy, said, let's put this on television. And that's how I got the job.
He's a smart dude.
He's a smart dude. Yeah.
And you definitely don't want to be on the other side of him competitively on any kind of a game.
No, and he's on our show a few times, and he was on this one, and yeah, he's great. He's the master. He's the original guy. He makes up his own games. We have a a team on our show that make them up now. But when I would go to his house and have a game night, he'd do the strangest, most wonderful games that he made up himself.
Who, like when I have sports people on the show, I go, name your top five basketball players. If you had to put together your top celebrity game team,
mm-hmm.
Sean Hayes, for sure.
Yeah, Sean Hayes. Let's see. Yvette Nicole Brown. She's mm-hmm. brilliant. Anthony Anderson is really good. Who else is really, really good? Kristen Bell. She was on our show the other day, too. She was great.
She's so great.
Yeah, she's wonderful. And she's really bright and just real. She's really good at it. Yeah.
Have you ever been on a game show that wasn't your own?
Yes.
Have you ever been a contestant?
Yes. It's called 25 Words or Less. And it's Lisa Kudrow's new show and Dan Bukatinski. I don't know if you know them. They're producing.
Oh, I love them. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and it's on Fox and it's syndicated. And Meredith Vieira is the host. And I've done probably 25 of them. It's syndicated. So they shoot like four or five in a day, maybe even six in a day. And I love it. It's off the top of your head. It's like the fast thinking. The reference level is like you have to read People magazine. You have to know like pop culture. And it's so much fun. I love it. Yeah, I love doing that show.
I did. Lisa had this great show called Who Do You Think You Are?
Yes,
which
you did
is
that.
The genealogy show?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. It was one of the great experiences of my life. They come to you and they say, so it's a genealogy show. We're going to explore your family tree.
Right.
And we're going to take however long it takes to do it.
Yeah.
It may take us a year.
Mm-hmm.
It may take us 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. But if we find something, we'll come back to you. Are you willing to do the show, which would require you then to travel potentially for 8 days?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, I put it off. Like, how do you schedule it? I don't know. And I put it off and put it off and put it off. And I finally said I would do it. And a year later,
yeah,
they came back and said, your episode's ready. Get a passport. And you are going to pack for cold weather.
Oh, my God.
And that's all you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all you know.
Wow.
And I went to LAX. You don't know where you're going. I flew to Washington, D.C. And I went to the Library of Congress. And then I went. Then I had to fly to Germany. And the long and short of it was just and the sort of mystery and the misdirects of how you get there is the beauty of it. But the long and short of it was that my 5-time great-grandfather was conscripted into the Hessian mercenary army out of Fürstenhagen, Germany. I went and saw the house he lived in. I saw the church records from 1600. He arrived in Manhattan in 1776 and fought against George Washington at the Battle of Trenton, where Washington crossed the Delaware.
Oh, my God. So he was a mercenary.
In that battle were 3 future presidents
mm-hmm.
and the first member of the Supreme Court, my 5-time great-grandpa, was taken prisoner and then was given his freedom if he would become an American citizen, and then ended up raising money for the American Revolutionary troops and thereby making me a son of the American Revolution in the most roundabout way imaginable.
Wow. Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. Do you know they did my stuff too, and they didn't find anything interesting enough.
See that?
They don't do it. And, you know, they're friends. You would think they would want to do this for their friend Jane, and they didn't.
You think they'd make something up?
Yeah,
how hard
exactly.
would that be?
They said, we just didn't find anything. So, you know, because now my appetite was whetted. And so I had my agent get a hold of the Your Roots people, Finding Your Roots on PBS with Henry Gates. And I did one with them, and it was fun and interesting. But nothing, there wasn't a big story. There might be, who knows, you have to really look into it, but there wasn't anything. I'm probably the most interesting person. So maybe 100 years from now, somebody will look back and go, did you know this girl who was in The Fugitive is your great, great, great aunt?
The Fugitive.
Yeah, The Fugitive.
And we'll be right back after this.
Transform your bathroom cleaning with Wet and Forget. weekly shower cleaner. You just spray today and rinse tomorrow for a no-scrub clean. With over 33,000 five-star reviews, this is your once-a-week solution to keeping your tub and shower surfaces sparkling clean. Available at Amazon, Lowe's, Menards, Home Depot, and Ace Hardware. Join thousands who've switched to an easier clean. Get your wet and forget weekly shower cleaner today and make your bathroom sparkle with zero scrubbing.
When it comes to scents, you should pick ones that smell like, well, you. Target gets it, which is why they offer a range of personal care products with fragrances for everyone. Be true to floral you with Dove Peony and Rose Body Wash. Live your fresh life with Degree Ultra Clear Deodorant. Express your decadent side with Love Beauty and Planet Coconut Shampoo. This spring, choose care that brings you joy beyond labels. Pick up new favorites at a Target near you or online at Target.com.
I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high-performance EVs. They're certainly out here, there, but when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it, and I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience. And of course, it's an EV. So the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle. Music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires.
I want to do with you with what I do is some of, I don't do this with all the guests. I only do it with some of the guests, and you qualify.
You
have qualified to make it into, because it's all the talk about games, I think, is what's piqued my interest in doing a round of questions called the lowdown.
Lowdown. I get it. That's so clever, Rob.
Isn't it clever? Isn't it just? It's just, I mean, because no one's ever used that ever when writing about me.
No.
So I've reclaimed the phrase for myself.
There you go.
And, so I think the first question is Rolling Stones or Beatles?
Beatles.
That was quick. There was no.
No, you know, I love the Beatles so much. And I think they did such a vast variety of music. And I like the Rolling Stones, but I don't love them. I haven't been attracted to them the way I feel about the Beatles.
Well, speaking of attracted, that goes right to the next question. Has there ever been a cartoon character that you wanted to have sex with?
Yeah.
Because for me, just I'm not asking you something I wouldn't ask myself or that I haven't thought of myself.
Yes.
For me, it was, without a question, the purple-eyed cat in the Aristocats.
So you were really attracted to that cat?
I was six, and it was the Zsa Zsa Gabor's voice, I think.
Oh, sure. Now, I felt that being of the lesbian persuasion, I liked Natasha from Boris and Natasha.
Michael. I bet you did.
Yeah, she was just very sexy and very dangerous.
And sort of goth before there
very
was such
goth,
a thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that kind of Eastern European goth spot, right?
Yes, and she's also, it turns out I love Greta Garbo. She had kind of a voice like Greta Garbo. Like that, but Greta, I just did Russian. Greta Garbo was Swedish, but there was that throaty kind of sexy thing that, you know, she'd slit your own throat.
How about this? What's the worst review you've ever gotten?
Oh, I was in a Shakespeare company in Chicago, and it was Richard III, and I played the mother. I forget what her name was, but it's usually a part that is cut because it is so verbose and over the top. And the reviewer from the Chicago Reader said, after Jane Lynch's monologues, there was none of the set remained because she had eaten it all.
That's a good one. But I see that. I think that's also, I'm not sure that's a bad review though. I got to just say, as a disinterested third party.
Yeah, right.
I'm not sure that's a bad review. Yeah. I think that's like I could say after Alec Baldwin's always be closing speech in Glengarry Glen Ross, there was no set left because Alec had eaten it all.
It all. And that was masterful, though. That was quite masterful. How about you? Have you had a really terrible review?
Oh. Well, I have two of them. I remember there was a critic named Molly Haskell that everybody, she was like the, she was on the sort of level of you know, Janet Maslin. Who liked me, always liked me, Janet Maslin, but Molly Haskell did not. Molly Haskell, in a review, begged me to stop wearing so much rouge.
But you weren't, will you? Because you've got a, you've got that natural.
I have never worn rouge.
Yeah.
Unless it was in my private life. there's never been rouge on screen. I also got, I remember picking up Newsweek to see, I knew there was going to be a review of a movie I did called Class with Jacqueline Bisset, shot in Chicago, incidentally.
Yeah, I remember that.
At the Lake Forest Academy. And I knew the review wasn't going to be good when the headline in the table of contents said, Class, a vile concoction, page 73. It's not going to be.
Not going to be.
It's not going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to be good. If you, which would you rather see? A UFO, a ghost, or Bigfoot? And would you tell anybody?
Yeah.
These are the hard-hitting questions you get here on this podcast.
You know, what's great about that question is I have kind of gone down the rabbit hole of UFOs in the last.
I'm in the rabbit hole with you. Open this fucking Pandora's box, you better be down to clown, Jane Lynch.
Yeah, so I would say UFO, I'd be scared to death. But do you ever watch Joe Rogan and he interviewed this guy, Lazar? I forget his first, Robert.
Bob Lazar. Yeah, he's like Michael Jackson.
Yeah. And that other guy that was in the Navy, I forget what his name was, Commander something or other. And he saw a UFO flying a plane. But yeah, I've gotten into it. I watched the movie about Lazar and the whole, this is like in the last week. So yes, UFO for sure.
Before I forget, I think it's on Netflix, Above Majestic.
Okay.
It's a documentary called Above Majestic.
It's UFO.
I stumbled upon it's all of it. I can't even begin to tell you what it is, but the phrase Above Majestic is way above top secret.
Mm.
And it makes Bob Lazar look like Mr. Rogers.
Wow. That's amazing. So, okay.
But if you saw a UFO, would you tell anybody?
I'd tell you, Rob. Because
you on a podcast, so nobody would know.
Right, so nobody would, so we could keep it between ourselves.
What if the reason that we can only hear out of one ear is mm-hmm. because we've been abducted?
I see.
And we're the special chosen ones. I mean, do you ever think about that?
Call me superstitious or conspiracy theory. You know, I don't know. I think there's probably some alien out there using the hearing from our right ear.
That is it.
Mm-hmm.
That is it. I think you're right. I have one. If you could take one drug as much as you wanted, whenever you wanted, with no negative side effects or judgments, and nobody would know, what would it be?
Oh, boy. You know, I'm not a big drug person, but I do. I am.
I'm huge. Fucking
love them. Drug person.
Bring them on.
You know, I've never done ayahuasca, and I've never done
exactly.
Mushroom-type situation, psilocybin. I would like to do and go on some trips.
The ayahuasca trip.
Mind trips with some psilocybin or ayahuasca and have my mind blown, but not die.
That's the problem because you hear stories about it where people have had amazing experiences and then you hear, you know, it's like the cautionary tale where they did it once and they were never the same.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think that happens a lot. Maybe I listen to Joe Rogan too much. He's a big advocate for it, but
yeah. Yeah, I just celebrated my 30th year sober.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So all my drug experimenting and all that is very much in the past for me. So I can look at it with a sort of different perspective, but the only thing that I miss is a good mushroom experience only about once a year because it knocks the shit out of you, kind of.
Does it?
I just laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, well, maybe we'll do it. You know, I'm sober as well. And I was sober for about 27 years. And then I took
I took
3 years of drinking wine. And I did okay, but I needed to get sober again from it. I kind of went into some denial. And now I'm sober again for, I guess, a couple of years. But, you know, when you add it all up, that's about 30 years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well,
it's amazing because it's so funny you say that because the wine thing that started, it wasn't around. My era was go-go 80s and it was like, you know, kamikazes and fucking Heinekens and blow.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden this like whole wine obsession happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the new tequila, that's another thing that was not happening for me. There was Cuervo Gold. That was it.
Right. And there's so many.
Oh, yeah. Like Steely Dan song, the Cuervo Gold, the fine Colombian, make tonight a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
That was it. Now there's this fabulous. So there's all this stuff that quote unquote missed.
Missed. Me too.
So I've always thought about what it would be like to maybe go back and sample it. So how was your wine sampling?
Well, you know, wine is an amazing thing. And I started out, you know, just being, you know, tasting. And then over 3 years, but probably the last year and a half, I was drinking alcoholically. And how quickly you go into denial, even with what at the time was 27 years of sobriety in me, I Amazing. Managed to fool myself for probably about a year and a half that I was fine. And I wasn't. And, you know, I have a partner who was, at one point she said, okay, so you're a drinker now. And I was like, what are you talking about? Wine with dinner. But wine with dinner was like, you know, 4 or 5 glasses. But I was telling myself that I wasn't doing that. So anyway, it was a pretty quick descent Amazing. Into denial. But there was about a year and a half where, you know, I would drink wine one day and not the next. But then, you know.
Yeah, it's funny for me, like they say that our addiction, no matter how many years we have sober, it's always in the hallway doing push-ups.
And it's true. I'm here to tell you. It's true. Mm-hmm.
This is amazing to hear. I mean, because you very rarely meet people with that amount of time.
Yeah, who go
out. Who decide to go in and experiment a little bit with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I relate to the slippery slope. I got, I was directing in Canada about 2 years ago, and there was a terrible like cold flu, whatever going around, and a cough. And so I got cough syrup. What I didn't realize was in Canada, the cough syrup has codeine in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was I was such a little happy clam running home after rap to turn all the lights off
and take that
and listen to James Taylor and drink my Shazirup.
Yeah. Couldn't wait, right?
And yep. Couldn't wait to hear, you know, Copperline and just be whacked on my cough syrup. And then you go, oh, I see how this would play out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I was a NyQuil person too before I got sober. I was taking NyQuil all the time to sleep. And I got really, really sick in about 2000 and I took some NyQuil. And although I didn't go out and start drinking, I saw that, you know, I could totally, this could accelerate easily.
I don't like getting sick, but if I'm going to get sick, I cannot wait to have my NyQuil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that soft cotton.
I mean. Ooh, see, this is like, if you have never had any doubt about like, are we addict alcoholics? It's like normal people are like, it's fucking NyQuil. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
We're like, you don't really know.
Right. Exactly.
It was cute. I had my 30th birthday and my family made me like a cake and like, it was really, 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 really cool. It was It was a fun thing. I'm glad you're back amongst us. That's
yeah,
cool.
I'm glad too. Yeah, and you know, it was. I got to tell you, it was like the first time I got sober. It was really like an act of grace. It wasn't something that I had to work for. It was like all of a sudden it happened, and I was struck sober. And I went, okay, I am not going to. I am so grateful for this, and I get it. I got the message, and thank you for making it so easy to let it go again, because it was easy. It just happened. I was really lucky. I didn't have to suffer.
That is, I was the same. I got it the first time, knocking on wood. Mm-hmm. But it's good to hear to be vigilant, because it really is true. It's like you can, I think it's a part of our, well, I think it's kind of scientifically proven that it's kind of a part of our genetic makeup, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that, you know, like my sister and brother have no problem with it, but I do. So it's, right. You know, it's my individual genetic profile that isn't necessarily a part of my family's, but I got it. I know I got it.
Yeah, I got it. And then it morphs. I like to say it's like whack-a-mole where yes. You pound it down here and then it pops up over here in some other like new, like, you know what? I think it'd be a good idea to gamble all my money away. That would be awesome. Or you know, if I can knock that down, like, you know what you need to do? You need to eat yourself to death via Haagen-Dazs.
Exactly. That's what I will transfer it into onto food or coffee. And you know what? So what about coffee? That's fine.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about coffee. Yeah. So I saw that in the thing. It says, Jane Lynch is addicted to coffee. How addicted to coffee do you need to be to end up on my background saying you're addicted to coffee?
You know, like I'm an addict, so I don't do anything halfway. And that includes coffee. It is everything to me. It gets me out of bed in the morning.
Look what I got. Look what I'm holding.
This is my afternoon one.
Iced coffee.
Yeah, this is my afternoon one, too. So I look forward to it in the afternoon. And sometimes I go to bed at night earlier. Going the sooner I get up, the sooner I get to go to King's Road Cafe and get my coffee. And I love it. It's my favorite thing in the world to do. And it never fails to work.
You and I think exactly alike.
We're like the same
person. I go to bed
person,
thinking
Bob.
About when I can wake up and have my coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We're like the same person. We got a lot in common.
No, Midwestern, deaf in one ear, coffee freak,
alcoholic.
Fucking amazing. how much coffee can you... Like, give me your regimen, because then I'll give you mine. We'll see who's more addicted.
Let's see. I order two in the morning, so I get two hot ones, and I get breves. I get two hot breves. I put one in the car, and then I walk through the neighborhood with one. So I have two, and then when I get out of bed, I have one, too. So that's my third by 7 o'clock. And then I will have one at 1 or 2, and then I'll have, like, a decaf at around, like, 5, 6 o'clock. And I'll try not to have another decaf until I fall asleep, because even decaf keeps me awake if I'm not careful.
I can do like espresso at dinner and be fine.
Oh, wow. Good for you. Not me. Oh, wish I could do that.
Yeah, I can do that. So I do a triple espresso when I wake up. Mm-hmm. I do. If I'm on the set, I'll do another triple espresso sometime during the day.
Yeah.
5, 6 o'clock is another triple espresso. So we're looking at 9 espressos a day.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Right there. And that's if I'm kind of okay. Mm. If I'm really off the rails, it could be worse. And if I'm really trying to keep it together, maybe I don't have anything after 3.
Yeah. I hear you. That's great.
It's too good. Well, this has been so fun. I thank you so much for this. This was a great way to spend an afternoon. You're a champ for coming and sitting in with all of us here.
So happy.
It was really, really fun. And we talked to Christopher Guest and tell him to put me in one of the movies.
Absolutely.
Please?
Yeah. Well, you know, he everybody's famous now that he works with, so he's going to have to work.
That's right. I'm too famous. I forgot. My face is fucking me up again. Ah, God darn it. I'll wear a bag over my head.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll wear a mask.
Yeah. Well, you might have to. Yeah.
I might have to.
Yeah, right.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
All right, Jane. Thank you so much. You were amazing.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Take care.
For sure.
Bye.
Well, now I'm going to go and drink a ton of coffee. I'm going to drink. Here's the good news. I'm going to drink a ton of coffee. I'm not going to drink wine. That's the takeaway. This is a gift for me. I don't have to try and experiment with anything. That's what I got from Jane. I'm not kidding. I actually
think it's amazing. Anyway, I hope you had as much fun as I did, and I will see you next time on Literally with me, Rob Lowe.
You have been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe. Produced and engineered by me, Devin Torrey Bryant. Executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile. Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco. And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Stitcher. The supervising producer is Aaron Blaert. Talent producer, Jennifer Samples. Please rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts. And remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
When it comes to scents, you should pick ones that smell like, well, you. Target gets it, which is why they offer a range of personal care products with fragrances for everyone. Be true to floral you with Dove Peony and Rose Body Wash. Live your fresh life with Degree Ultra Clear Deodorant. Express your decadent side with Love Beauty and Planet Coconut Shampoo. This spring, choose care that brings you joy beyond labels. Pick up new favorites at a Target near you or online at Target.com.